What happens when you mix hacking and insider trading? From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. Now, to commit insider trading, you have to be on the inside. You know, you have to know about some deal or merger that's going to affect some company's stock price and then move on it. So if you aren't privy to inside information, what apparently do you do? Hack your way into it. The U.S. has charged three Chinese traders with doing exactly this. Marketplace's Lewis Wallace has more.
Yep. So the U.S. alleges that these three traders hacked into law firms that represent big corporate clients. And these law firms have a lot of private information on things like mergers and acquisitions. But the hackers weren't just out to steal customer data of some kind. The charge is that they stole a bunch of emails in 2014 and 2015 and then used the information there to buy shares of companies before they announced deals and their stocks went up. So it's this hacker insider trading mashup. The traders allegedly earned more than $4 million on those trades. One of them has been arrested in Hong Kong. It's not clear yet what's happening with the other two. Manhattan U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara called the case a, quote, wake-up call for law firms around the world. He says law firms will be targets of cyber hacking because they have information that can be valuable.
Thank you, Lewis. And let's do the numbers. The Nikkei is about flat. Dow Jones Industrial Futures are up just 0.1%. S&P futures up 0.2%. NASDAQ futures up almost 0.3%. Bitcoin. Remember Bitcoin? The digital currency? Hasn't gone away. Still here. And 2016 was a great year for it. Bitcoin's value has risen almost 90%, making it one of the best performing assets of the year. The price for one Bitcoin is racing towards the $1,000 mark now. Marketplace's Rima Kreis reports on what is behind this Bitcoin boom.
One of the big reasons more people are gravitating toward Bitcoin is because of places like China, where it's hard to move money out of the country. Bitcoin has also attracted investors in India and Venezuela, where governments recently banned their largest circulating bills. Spencer Bogart covers Bitcoin at Needham & Company.
Bitcoin is one way that people are storing their value so that they have purchasing power in the future.
Anthem Blanchard is founder of the cryptocurrency company Anthem Gold. He says Bitcoin could beat the price per ounce of gold, but will it ever edge it out in terms of market value?
Anything's possible. I mean, who would have thought it would have gotten to $935 a Bitcoin, you know, 7 years ago when it was trading at, you know, a dollar?
As for next year, Bogart predicts even more growth.
I think that we're going to see increasing acceptance and recognition among institutional investors in the space.
He says it's still far from mainstream, but Bitcoin is definitely headed in that direction. I'm Rima Kreis for Marketplace.
Now, if politics is really about apportioning resources, that is to say, who gets the money, there's a lot of change coming this next year. Help us explain, explore, and elucidate these stories as only my crew here at Marketplace can. I'm here to ask you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Help us keep it coming to you. It would be especially helpful to us if you donate at marketplace.org by December 31st.
As 2016 wraps up, we are picking up some stories that have been on a slow burn, things you might want to keep your eye on. One of those stories is the state of China's economy. You might remember the market crash at the beginning of this year sparked by a disappointing set of economic data out of China. Investors basically realized China was not going to come to the rescue of the global economic slump, and financially, it's been a pretty turbulent year for that country. To talk about this and what 2017 has in store, we're joined by Ishwar Prasad, professor of economics at Cornell University. Ishwar, first, how did 2016 treat China?
So China went through a difficult period with a stock market boom and then a bust, and then its currency started falling in value against the U.S. dollar. And there were lots of concerns about the Chinese economy hitting a period of stalling growth. All of these concerns led to some capital flowing out of the country, and that put even more pressure on the currency. So it's been a pretty rough year for China.
China's economy is still growing. It has stabilized. Why is capital fleeing it?
It's partly because the Chinese government actually has been encouraging capital to go out of the country. But in addition, there is the anti-corruption drive, which has caused some people to take their money out of China, and more recently, concern about the Chinese economy and about its currency.
So what can we expect from 2017 from China's economy?
There are long-term concerns about China's growth prospects because the demographic factors are not working in China's favor. And there are lots of concerns that China may be in for a financial crash of some sort, either through the banking sector or because too much money is flying out of the economy at the same time, or perhaps because the housing market collapses. So those concerns, I think, are the key thing for China, whether it can continue to maintain a decent pace of growth without coming apart at the seams.
Is that something you worry about, that there's a risk of a financial crash in China?
Now, if you look at many of the numbers related to China, it certainly looks like China is very vulnerable. So, for instance, the amount of corporate debt relative to annual GDP is about 150%. That's a pretty scary number. And in many economies in the past, that has been a time when a crisis has hit. But China in some ways is special because it doesn't have that much external debt. So this sort of nets out on the government's balance sheet. But certainly there are lots of loans that the state-owned banks have made that are never going to get paid back. So somebody is going to have to foot the bill. And that bill could be pretty large, somewhere in the range of about 10 to 15% of annual GDP. So it's not like it's going to be a financial crisis that causes the economy or the financial system to come apart at the seams. But it's going to be expensive to deal with it when they decide to deal with it.
Ishwar Prasad is a professor of economics at Cornell University, and his new book is all about China's currency and its role in reshaping global finance. It's called Gaining Currency, The Rise of the Renminbi. Ishwar, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure.
Ishwar talked about high levels of corporate debt in China, but there's news this has been a phenomenon everywhere in 2016 to some extent. The low price of borrowing globally has sent companies worldwide on a debt-buying binge. Companies issued just more than $3.6 trillion in corporate bonds, according to data provider Dealogic. That's what happens when you have negative interest rates in Europe and Japan, I guess. Next question is, what happens to all that debt when interest rates rise? In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.